You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I'm going to punch him out.
This is my mom. I would pay with you.
I've been waiting for this, for trespassing on the Capitol grounds. I'm going to punch him out, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to be happy. I'm going to punch him out.
This is my mom. I would pay with you.
I've been waiting for this, for trespassing on the Capitol grounds. I'm going to punch him out, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to be happy. I'm going to punch him out.
This is my mom. I would pay with you.
I've been waiting for this, for trespassing on the Capitol grounds. I'm going to punch him out, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to be happy.
That's right. We played it three different times. I want to make sure it's driven into your head. That was Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi on January 6th saying, I hope Trump comes to the Congress because I'm going to punch him out and go to jail happily because he trespassed on congressional property. He is the President of the United States. He can go damn where he wants on federal property. This is October 14, 2022. We are live streaming at Larry Connors USA. You go to Rumble.com, go to Larry Connors USA in your search bar. It'll bring up Rumble. You can join us live in studio. We had a little difficulty getting started, so we're running a little bit behind. But we're here. Make sure that you know we're here and let your friends and family, even your enemies, know we're on the air. So there was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi January 6th when she was told that Trump might want to come to Congress, leaving his event and going down the hall, or rather down the street, to where the protesters were gathering at the Capitol. She said, I hope they come. I hope he comes. I'm going to punch him out. And I'll be glad to go to jail. That's an assault of a federal officer. Where is it that the left is always calling up the MAGAs? The MAGAs are dangerous people, dangerous to our economy. And Pelosi saying, I'd be glad to punch the president in the face and punch him out. And there is a Speaker of the House threatening to do that. Because he trespassed on congressional property, he is the President of the United States. He can go where he chooses. Aside from the threat of violence, with the state, which the, I should say the state-controlled media absolutely ignores, but if Trump had made such a statement, if Trump had made such a statement about what he would do to Pelosi, do you have any idea how big that would blow up in your face over and over and over again? You know the, you know exactly how that would be played by state-controlled media, and that ticks me off just as much as her remarks and her attitude that I have the right and ability to do so. But again, I remind you, the president could not be charged with trespassing on federal property. And Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer say that the MAGAs and Trump and Republicans in general, anyone against their woke, green pie-in-the-sky culture, does not understand America and American democracy. They're the ones who don't understand. We're going to get into that in a lot more detail coming up. And by the way, that's going to include a look at the first of the two presidential debates in Michigan for the Michigan governor's race. And part of the issue involves Proposition 3. It's billed as an issue concerning abortion. But Margo Cleveland, federal senior correspondent, also points out Proposition 3 in Michigan will give children the right to puberty-blocking drugs without parental permission. They can simply go get puberty-blocking drugs. Their parents don't even have to know about it. We got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Make sure you, your family, even your enemies are aware. You don't want to miss any of it. You know what we say. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water.
Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with the Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Well, I started out with $1 lone dollar. Gambled with a man and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA. Ways.
The Saudi government is accusing the Biden administration of asking them to not cut back on oil production until after the midterm elections. Why did the White House do that?
It's not true. We did not ask them to cut back until after the elections. The elections had absolutely nothing to do with the communication we had with the Saudis about our concerns with a cut in production at this particular time. At a time right now when supply is the predominant challenge in the global oil market, we did not believe, mathematically speaking, trying to match supply and demand and keep the prices down, that this was the time to cut production, and certainly not by 2 million barrels. So it's just a farce. It's not true that this had anything to do with domestic politics.
No. We had nothing to do with domestic politics and asking Saudi Arabia, please don't cut your oil production until after the midterm elections. That was a question being posed by NBC, or MSNBC, I should point out. Let me correct again. It was NBC originally. Being posed to the White House National Security Council coordinator, John Kirby, and insisting it's a farce. It's a farce that we asked them to hold off any cut that they were going to make. If they're going to make a cut, wait until at least the midterm. Can you do that for us? They have lied and misstepped on the Saudi issue since the beginning. Part of it starts. It starts on day one of the Biden administration coming into office and immediately wiping out the Keystone Pipeline, which could deliver us 800,000 barrels a day from Canada. And then also taking measures that would begin to shut down and close oil rigs that were operating and refused to let others start up because we want to move away from fossil fuel industry. He was beholden and worshiping at the green pie in the sky altar. And that's what they wanted to see happen. So that's what he was going to make happen. Now the Saudis and OPEC, recognizing, you know, the U.S. under Trump really didn't need our oil and gas because Trump was making sure his nation was taking care and using its own fuel. In fact, we were net exporter. We had more than enough for Americans at that time. And we were sending it off to others. Now, we would bring some in just for trade relations, but we didn't have to. And so the prices were not as high as they are now. You can dispute and argue all you want about how much you hate Trump and how he ran the things, how he talked, lack of class, things of this nature. On some of them, I would agree with you with. But you cannot deny, the economics of where we were under Trump versus where we are now and where we're still headed with Biden at this point. And when OPEC saw last June Biden come to Riyadh to have discussions with them, and we were told we're not going there to beg for oil. That's not why we're going there. And they later said we didn't discuss oil. And now they say, well, we did, but it was in context of numerous other things. We had a ball of wax. We were going to do all kinds of things. But then after the meeting, OPEC agreed that it would help us out, but then got to thinking about how Biden had referred to Saudi Arabia as pariahs, and then comes there with his hand out almost begging for more oil so he can keep oil coming into this country and keep the prices from jumping up. And they realize literally, they have him and the U.S. of A. over a barrel. And so they're going to use that option. So they decided, you know what we're really going to do? We're just going to cut production by 2 million barrels. There. See how you like that. Well, of course, that's not good for the U.S. of A. Our prices went up, and the only way Biden could counter at the time was to dip into the strategic oil reserve, which is meant for a natural disaster-type situation where we really don't have oil and gas available. This is not to buy votes, but that's what he's using it for. If you're happy your gas prices are down a little bit, that's an effort to get you to vote Biden. And they're still not down where they were with Trump. So you make your own decision. If you're going to look at it economically, I don't think there's enough there to make a difference for you. But that's up to you and your family and how you decide it. But for them to lie and say, we didn't even discuss it, that it was just kind of, you know, it was, well, oh, well, all right, maybe we kind of, you know, hey, what's a three-letter word I'm thinking of? Starts with O, ends in L. Maybe that's how they approached it. But again, let's go back to John Kirby, the National Strategic Coordinator, Director of Communications, and talking to NBC on denying when the Saudis came out and said they were here begging for oil, and on top of that were asking us to wait until after the midterm. If we're going to cut production, at least wait until then.
It's just a farce. It's not true that this had anything to do with domestic politics.
So to be clear, you're saying the Saudis are lying to the world right now?
I'm saying that that our electoral calendar here in the United States had absolutely nothing to do with our communication with the Saudis about the timing, about any cut at all, but certainly about the timing. We asked them to obviously not cut production, and we certainly opened up the possibility that, you know, that they would want to look at this at future OPEC Plus meetings, and there are a couple coming up here in the fall. But it had absolutely nothing to do with the election calendar. It's just wrong.
Do you buy that? Really? I'm sure you don't. And I think they know you don't. But they're trying to put the best face, the best foot forward. He kind of admitted, didn't he, that, we discussed oil, but it had nothing to do with the calendar. Well, I mean, we weren't looking at our electoral calendar. This administration has been looking at its electoral calendar since day one. How can we get more votes and make sure we hold midterm despite everything going south? And they continue to look at it. And if they thought if we could just keep the prices up through the midterm election, then let the Saudis cut it a little bit. Big deal. We'll get it back on track before we get to November of 2024. That was the idea. But there you had Kirby saying, no, it was just, you know, we knew there were going to be some talks coming up. They might be doing it, and there's some still to come in fall. And by fall, he's talking about after the November 8th elections in the U.S. Just refusing to acknowledge we were asking it as a political favor. With that, even with his denial, the Saudis told him, take a hike, pretty much spitting in Biden's face. We're going to do what we want. We don't care. We know you have got an issue with Russia right now, and so we're also going to talk to Russia, and which they have. General Jack Keane, who is a commentator and, of course, a retired four-star general appearing on Fox News as a consultant, said, you know, you got to remember the whole power and the value of OPEC. And if you don't remember it, OPEC does.
OPEC, as we've seen through the years, they operate in their own self-interest. This is an organization that's about, they want stability, certainly, in the oil market. But they're also in the business of making money. And that's the reality of what has taken place here. And the fact that this administration already passed up the huge opportunity to produce more ourselves is really the lame decision the administration made. We know the crunch we're in here, given market realities dealing with oil. And we could have solved this problem ourselves.
We could have, because I told you previously, and reminding you, when you talk about oil and natural gas in this nation, under our feet, in the Continental 48, much less offshore, but also part of our property as well, we have anywhere from 300 to 500 years worth of fossil fuels available. There's no reason for us to go begging anyone for anything if we would use what we have. Now, in 300 years, let's say 200 years, you might be around me. I might. Hell, you never know. I've got longevity. Jack keeps me young. Now, Jack being that favorite beverage of mine, in moderation. But the bottom line here is, in 200 years, we might actually be in position to go total electric in the sense of no fossil fuels, that we're going only on electric or hydro, nuclear power, things of that nature, that we won't have a need for fossil fuels. But we're not there yet. The day Henry T. Ford ran off his first assembly line, started rolling those Ford T's out on the street, I mean, no one suddenly decided, well, we won't need horses anymore, ever again. Put them all down. No, they didn't. So that was a glimpse of what was coming in the future, but it wasn't done yet. The day the Wright brothers got their first flight, no one all of a sudden said, well, we might as well not need trains or cars anymore because we'll be flying everywhere. No, it didn't. So if to believe John Kirby, when they went to Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, this last summer, and it wasn't really to go get something from the Saudis reference oil, then what would it be? Here's how he described the purpose of the trip.
This trip was about much bigger things than just oil production. Energy security clearly was on the agenda. We talked about that, obviously. And the president even said so on the trip in the moment, that he had discussions with GCC leaders about oil production. But there was an awful lot else on that agenda. It was really about trying to forge an integrated, more cooperative region. And you know what? It has paid dividends. Just the other day, Israel and Lebanon agreed to the first ever maritime border that will allow Lebanon now to try to exploit some natural resources, natural gas, in fields off their coast and help their own economy. First time in history. That wasn't by accident. That was a result of President Biden's diplomatic outreach and hard work.
Did you see what he just did? First of all, he said, we were acknowledging, and even the president, well, he originally denied they went there begging for oil. I know he doesn't like the term begging, but that's what it was. But the other thing he said, look what we did. We got Lebanon to have some of their own oil and gas production, some they hadn't had. In other words, we're willing to help another country get its fossil fuel production going while shutting ours down. That should have alarmed the woke culture, green pie in the sky people. Why did you go help Lebanon start up an oil operation? Because this administration has no direction. And General Keane points out, Biden, in the purpose of all this, is also harming Saudi relations, which are critical for our nation.
Our strategic enemy in the region is Iran. And their number one strategic opponent in the region, who has the most wealth and the most might, is Saudi Arabia. And all the Arab states follow their lead, pretty much. So that is what the issue is. And can you imagine, from Saudi Arabia's perspective, President Biden becomes president. He's already told the world that Saudi Arabia is an international pariah.
Yeah.
Now, President Trump wire-brushed the Saudis over the Khashoggi affair, which was a horrific event.
Mm-hmm.
And they were held accountable for it. But he didn't change the strategic partnership as a result of it. President Biden also stopped a military shipment that was initially going to go to Saudi Arabia around the time of his assuming the presidency, shut it down cold, and at the same time reached out to Iran to renegotiate a flawed nuclear deal. That's what the Saudis saw at the beginning of the Biden administration. And then, because they have alternatives, the Saudis start to move a little bit to get assistance from Russia and to China because they believe, given the evidence, the United States is pulling away.
And that is upsetting to the Saudis and the rest of the Middle East that follows Saudis, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, because Biden is telling them their pariah and has no use for them. Yet I would like your help. But in the meantime, he's going to Iran. He's going to help them get a nuclear plan, basically a nuclear power going. Yeah, that's why they're so ticked off and why we're going to pay for it. Coming up, the debate in Michigan between the governor's race.
The military community often faces challenges transitioning into the job market due to a general misunderstanding of how military skills translate to civilian job requirements. Since our beginning, Recruit Military has connected millions of veterans and military spouses with thousands of employers across the nation. Our approach streamlines the job search process to provide you with meaningful career opportunities with employers that value your military experience. Start by creating your Recruit Military profile, including details of your military background, any relevant skills and experience, as well as what you're looking for in a new job. You can view jobs, speak with recruiters, and register for job fairs with one click. We'll take it from there. In fact, we're making the search process more personal by adding a human touch, our candidate success representatives. For over 30 years, our staff of veterans, civilians, and military family members have bridged the gap between military and civilian employment. Take the first step in your post-military career. Create your Recruit Military profile today.
Hi, I'm Officer Cashman with the Parker Police Department. Today we're going to give you some tips to prevent car break-ins. Thieves will go down a street, and there'll be 100 cars, and they'll pull door handles. So we window shop the things we want to possibly purchase. What thieves do is they window shop your vehicles looking for anything of value. Purses, computers, laptops, anything that they'd like to take, they'll take. Put those items of value in your trunk before you get to your destination. He's watching for you to put those items in the trunk, know they're there, and then you're going to go inside for an hour. If you can't hide items in the trunk, at least hide them so they're out of plain sight. Some people feel more secure by having their car alarm on. They think it's okay to leave valuables in their car. That's not necessarily true. So many people hear car alarms throughout the day, they don't pay attention to them anymore. If you see somebody breaking into cars, pulling door handles, peering into windows, we want you to report that immediately to 911. We don't want you to approach the person. We want you to be the best witness that you can be. Get a vehicle description, a suspect description, direction of travel. Those are the things to keep you safe, and that's what we're looking for in law enforcement.
I'm Paula Basta, the director of the Illinois Department on Aging. We have an adult protective services program that responds to abuse, neglect, and exploitation of persons 60 years of age or older, and persons with disabilities between the ages of 18 and 59. To report suspected abuse, neglect, or exploitation of your neighbor, friend, family member, or even yourself, call 1-866-800-1409. All calls are confidential. That number again is 1-866-800-1409, or visit www.illinois.gov/aging to learn more. Sponsored by the Illinois Department on Aging and this station.
KXEN St. Louis.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
When the Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade, it took away rights that we've had for 49 years, rights that I've had my whole life, are now been ripped away from women and girls in this country. Michigan could revert to a 1931 law that makes it a felony, no exceptions for rape or incest, criminalizing doctors and nurses. The only reason that law is not in effect right now is because of my lawsuit stopping it. When Roe fell, Mrs. Dixon celebrated that. She said it didn't even go far enough. She said she wanted to make abortion a felony, no exceptions for rape, incest, or health of the woman, and throw doctors and nurses in jail. That is too extreme and too dangerous.
too extreme and too dangerous, in the words of Democrat Governor Gretchen Whitmer, for what her Republican opponent, Tudor Dixon, is pushing. Now, riddle me this. What's too extreme and too dangerous for the unborn baby? Killing the baby. Whitmer is trying to make it sound as if there is no abortion available in the U.S. anymore, which is a lie. Abortion is available. About 13, maybe 14 states have outlawed abortion for any reason. I do have a problem for any reason. I mean, and some of those do also include or exclude a woman's health herself if she's facing death if they continue. There's a lot of things in here that you're not going to find someone that would go maybe 100% on every issue. Let me correct that. You will find some that will, but I have a problem with going 100% regardless of circumstances. I do want to protect the baby, and I certainly want to protect the mother. And then you get into cases of rape and incest. Generally, rape, if it's reported soon enough, things can be taken that there will never be a conception. If it's incest, you don't know how long it's gone on. And if it's rape, and it could also be considered and dragged out for a period of time if the woman's held prisoner for a time. I mean, there are all kinds of things you could build into the storyline. But Governor Whitmer is saying that if we don't fight back, my state could go back to a 1931 law that would allow no exceptions whatsoever. And it would criminalize and penalize doctors and nurses that help carry out abortions. But she says, I can put a stop to that. She really overestimates the power of the state against the federal government, because what she has done is saying that as a state governor, I can make all these decisions and the government won't count. But yet when DeSantis says something like that, my God, the left goes crazy. You have to be more specific, but they don't care about the specifics, because when you get down to details, and details do matter, and then the argument begins to fall apart. We're going to have more of that debate section coming up in the next hour, but I want to give you a preview for that, because one of the things that is being brought up in that debate and what they're doing with abortion within the state of Michigan that they're now debating over involves Proposition 3. Let me read this. This is the way it shows on the ballot text in Michigan. A proposal to amend the state constitution to establish new individual right to reproductive freedom, including right to make all decisions about pregnancy and abortion, allow the state to regulate abortion in some cases, and forbid prosecution of individuals in exercising established right. This proposed constitutional amendment would establish new individual right to reproductive freedom, including right to make and carry out all decisions about pregnancy, such as prenatal care, childbirth, postpartum care, contraception, sterilization, abortion, miscarriage management, and infertility. Allow the state to regulate abortion after fetal viability, but not prohibit if medically needed to protect the patient's life or physical or mental health. Of course, the patient is considered the woman, not the baby. Forbid state discrimination in enforcement of this right. Prohibit prosecution of an individual or a person helping a pregnant individual for exercising rights established by this amendment. Invalidate state laws conflicting with this amendment should this proposal be adopted. Overall, it sounds like it's just dealing with abortion. But I've got a guess coming up in the next segment that says buried inside that language is something that probably didn't stand out to you. I mean, if you just read it, and unless you know the details, and the details are important, as I said, they would also end up allowing children to get puberty-blocking drugs without parental permission. Is that what you want? My guest coming up next.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Then the ship came around in the middle of the night. Heard mama crying that something wasn't right. He's headed down to Knoxville with a weekly load. You can smell a whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
Hey.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. So I was just reading to you, as it appears on the ballot, at last check I saw, from Proposition 3 in Michigan, the so-called abortion bill that they're considering. And my guest, Margo Cleveland, federal senior correspondent for The Federalist, joining us now. Margo, glad to have you on board.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I was looking at a piece that you wrote that said, really, inside that Prop 3 is hidden language. And I read the specifics a moment ago, but you're saying that inside there, there's going to give the constitutional right to gender-affirming care, which in turn is code word for children could go get puberty blockers and without parental permission. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So I pulled up the actual constitutional amendment, and if you read it, it starts out by talking about individuals. So it doesn't distinguish between adults or minors. It also doesn't distinguish between men and women or boys or girls. So it includes the right of all individuals to make decisions. And it starts by saying about pregnancy, but then it continues, including but not limited to, and it talks about all matters. And it goes through and it gives a list of different things that it includes, including sterilization. And then, if you continue on, there's another part of it that says that the state cannot discriminate. The state also cannot pass any laws that infringe on these rights that the Constitution of Michigan would then impose or create, unless there is a compelling interest and it's an and here, does not interfere with the individual's self-autonomy. So this is all written very lawyer-like. And I spent 25 years working for a federal appellate judge at the Seventh Circuit. And one of the things that I did was I looked at constitutional challenges. I looked at statutory interpretation. Everything I'm saying here is plain, basic constitutional law 101. You have to interpret the words in the statute according to their plain meaning. What does an individual mean? It means any individual, boy, girl. And if you can't discriminate, you can't discriminate based on age.
All right, let me help you.
What about?
Me help break down some of this, because I did read the ballot text, at least it was purported to be the ballot text. And you're right, it says establish new individual right to reproductive freedom, including the right to make and carry out all decisions about pregnancy, such as prenatal care, childbirth, postpartum care, contraception, sterilization, abortion, miscarriage management, and infertility. I don't see it going past that reference of transgender. Does that appear in still deeper in some other copy that did not show? Is it showing on the ballot like that or not?
No. Well, there's nothing in it that says transgender. It doesn't need to. What is the very first thing that a child gets for gender-affirming care? Puberty blockers,
right,
that stop and destroy and make the children sterile. They don't reach sexual maturation. That is sterilization. What other things do they do? They then maybe do a castration or remove ovaries or remove the uterus. All of those things are specific things that are done to supposedly affirm someone's gender, but all of them are medical procedures that sterilize. And you don't have to just look at that. I'm sorry, go ahead and then I can give you an example from another state.
Well, I was going to say, but the Michigan voters, as they look at this ballot, if they take time to actually read it, as I read here, there's nothing in there at all that reference puberty blockers. It does say establish new individual right to reproductive freedom. And I certainly understand where you're going with that. But in other words, you're still saying it's going to encompass that, and it's not really even in there for them to actually see in print. Am I right?
Correct. And this is the part where the no side is talking about the language being confusing. Frankly, the language isn't confusing, but the people who are trying to push this as a yes vote are using the language to confuse. There's nothing in there that talks about transgender individuals. There's nothing in there that talks about gender-affirming care. But the plain language reaches it. So absolutely, someone reading that ballot, especially when what you're seeing from the left is them saying, oh, it's just codifying Roe. That is the talking point, that this is a codification of Roe.
Sure.
And those
on that side would say, Margo, you're really reading way too much into this. It doesn't have anything to do with what you're saying. What's your response?
That they've probably either, one, never tried to interpret a statute as a lawyer, or two, they are blatantly lying. I'm not reading anything into it. I'm telling you, tell me what the word individual means. What does it mean? It means any individual, boy, girl, man, woman. There's no dispute about that. Tell me whether or not puberty blockers create or cause sterilization. Absolutely. It's right there. And in fact, this is where all you have to do is look at the other states. The states that are prohibiting minors from having puberty blockers and any sort of surgical intervention for a gender-affirming care, they expressly state this sterilizes children. That's why we as a state have an interest to prevent it from happening. What Michigan's doing is the opposite. It's saying individuals have the right to make all decisions.
So if they made it as clear as you're saying, there's no doubt many that might vote for this would say not only no, but hell no.
Exactly. And it's really, this is one kind of small niche of it, but it really is that extreme on abortion too. Parental consent will no longer be required for abortions in Michigan as it is currently. There can be no requirement that you have a medical doctor to provide abortions or waiting periods or informed consent. This is not a codification of Roe. And I, for those of you in Michigan, they had a debate last night with Governor Whitmer and Tudor Dixon. And this was appalling. When abortion came up, the question was posed, will you accept the decision of the voters? Tudor Dixon said, yes, I'm pro-life, but if this amendment passes, I have an obligation to apply and enforce the law. You know what the governor said? The governor said, well, this amendment's only part of it. If this fails, I still have my lawsuit.
Yeah.
In other words, she doesn't give a dang what the public says. She is going to prevent the public from having the choice about what Michigan law says.
Well, she also went on to say that the Tudor Dixon, this is someone who's still an election denier, doesn't believe 2020 because Biden won Michigan. So she tried to turn the tables on that sense. There are questions about the Michigan voting anyway. But you're right, she didn't really answer the question. She just simply turned it on its head and tried to make her points.
Absolutely. She tried to make her points, but she did answer it. She just answered it as a politician would,
right.
Have my lawsuit.
Yeah, it's not surprising the answer is a politician, either one of them. But when you're talking about other states, and in particular in California, they, as you well know, they have said that if you can get to our state, if your child and you get to our state, if a relative or a friend will get you here and you want to have not just puberty blockers, but full sexual transgender change, we will do it even without your parents being aware of it. That is one of the more frightening things I've heard. And a child gets a friend that says, I'll take you to California and we can get this all done.
Yep, it is. But you know what? Michigan's right behind it. There is a senator in Michigan or a representative who has already agreed that he will propose similar legislation for Michigan. And you know what? He's a big proponent of Proposition 3, just like Planned Parenthood is, who was responsible for getting this on the ballot, who's the second largest in the United States for providing, quote, gender-affirming care, who has been marketing puberty blockers to children. This is appalling, and most people don't know it because the other side is completely lying about what it says, and they refuse to look at the language.
I'm looking at a piece that I was going to kind of work in, but we've covered a lot of material that you have here, and that is there's a guide from the Fenway Institute giving a number of strategies doctors can use to pressure parents into accepting their child's transgender identity or pressuring the parents into accepting the child does need the operation and puberty blockers because it'll make them better.
It's just appalling. And there was actually a recent proposal in another state to make it a crime. Actually, it was a Virginia Democrat. I just pulled it up. Virginia Democrat introduced a bill to prosecute parents if they refuse to recognize their children's preference and their preferred gender. This is off the rails crazy.
Yes.
What is going on in this country. And this Prop 3 in Michigan is setting us up for the extreme consequences of what California did, what you're seeing with this bill proposal. It's just outrageous.
Margo Cleveland, The Federalist, I encourage you to read her article. It's written as Michigan is hiding a children's constitutional right. Margo, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. We'll do it again. Margo Cleveland. Coming up, PayPal story. We haven't had a chance to spend a lot of time on it. You need to be aware of this. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood. Lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Counting Country, and Clayton.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
A couple final notes regarding what we're discussing in the last segment of the Michigan abortion law that also ends up giving children a right to, without parental permission, get puberty-blocking drugs. And I'd mentioned in my interview with Margo Cleveland, The Federalist, this guide from the Fenway Institute. It's titled Engaging the Families of Transgender and Gender-Diverse Children, and giving various strategies doctors can use to pressure parents into accepting what their child wants. Stop and think about that for a moment. Take transgender issue out of it. What if your child, 7, 8, let's say 12, let's go to 12. Are you going to make 13, teen? Okay, 13. They want to go to a strip club and put money into the stripper's thongs and have all kinds of activity and drink booze. And you say, no way. But then others come along and say, no, you really should let them do that. Let them get this behavior out now, and it will make them a better person. Or if you don't, then they're going to feel like they're being cheated out of life. And, of course, unfortunately, we've got some public facilities, public libraries in blue cities and states that allow transgender-type dance queens and strippers to appear and perform in front of the kids anyway. Let them put dollar bills into the thongs as part of understanding what there's an age-appropriate issue that is always overlooked by the left. And also the fact that they know what's best for your child. They don't know what's best for themselves, nor this nation. But they're going to tell you how to raise your child. And in many cases, they don't have children. And if they do, I pray for those kids. There are same-sex couples that have adopted children. Our Transportation Secretary Buttigieg is one of them, he and his partner. Now, the bottom line for me is, of course, I'm against them doing it in that fashion, but if it's going to give a child a loving home and taking care of them, that's what you have to ask for. Hopefully they're not going to use their past history to try to reshape the child going forward, but adults do that all the time. If you're from a heterosexual parent, you probably were kind of given directives and things that kind of pointed you in a way. So that's going to happen one way or the other. It's easy to say it's wrong, they shouldn't have a child and everything else, but because they might turn them into transgenders as well or something like that. But the bottom line is the child is being loved and cared for. Cared for becomes a very crucial question there, doesn't it? Well, I said we'd talk about PayPal. I've not had time to spend on it. As you know, or if you hadn't heard, that PayPal just issued a statement the other day saying basically that anyone who violates its policy on misinformation, hate, or speech PayPal deemed is unfit for publication, we will deduct $2,500 from those who have an account with PayPal. I didn't have $2,500 in PayPal. No way I'm going to leave that kind of money in there. But what I did have in there, I saw this and I immediately had a reaction. I'll come to my reaction in just a moment, but I want to bring you up to speed that Congressman Daryl Issa, Republican of California, is demanding PayPal provide answers about this new language. See, they added it and then they quickly removed it. Said, it was a mistake. It shouldn't have been up there. But apparently the language had been prepared and ready to go. And I, in the back of my mind, say, yeah, they definitely put it out there. They wanted it out there. But then when the backlash came and all the money started coming out and their stock started going down, they said, I'll pull it. It was not supposed to go in. Well, then why the hell did you write it to begin with? You want to answer that for me? No, they don't want to answer that. So Congressman Issa says, asking PayPal, quote, how you intend to adjudicate the ambiguous term misinformation, and asking specifically if COVID misinformation would be included, as well as gender pronouns. He said the move indicates a new frontier of censorship, not just hiding written posts, but controlling speech through financial penalties. According to ISIP, the PayPal action is a new line in the sand. Big tech isn't just censoring speech, but imposing huge financial penalties to cripple people who don't comply. PayPal, of course, continues to insist that, well, it was a mistake. It never should have been up there. And he asked them, well, then how did you not only intend to adjudicate, but then detail those who approved this acceptable use policy that was posted? Because somebody had to approve it to begin with. It didn't just suddenly appear, did it? No, it had a green light. And they were going to seize any money in PayPal accounts and hold it. Now, I have had some money in PayPal because of various businesses and our people that I want to send money to. It's a quick, easy way to do it. But once that word surfaced the other day, my decision, I'm not telling you to do this. This is up to you. My decision is every bit of that money right back to my bank. Get it out of PayPal. Because what I do on this program on a daily basis will be enough for them to seize my money. You do what you want to. But I personally said, my money comes out of PayPal. And if you're worried about somebody controlling your money that's not you, you might consider the same, but that's up to you. Coming up in the next hour, more on Nancy Pelosi saying, I hope Donald Trump comes here on January 6th. I'm going to punch him out. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.